And we are back with episode 826 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville. Gosh, we better get right to it. In our doldrums and taking a few weeks off, a lot of stuff has been happening, and I can't wait to talk about it. So, yeah.
That's right. There is quite the list here on our show notes. Which is usually just a couple lines these days. But things have kind of exploded on us, largely because of all of our socializing over the last few weeks. As promised, we are back after a three-week break, mini hiatus, due to various conventions and other things going on. Certainly, we're going to talk a bit about Dragon Con. I have a bit of a con report for Colossal Con East. And then we have other news items of interest that have come up in the meantime. I should also just warn everyone that I am experiencing the lagging effects, I guess you could say, of a bit of con crud. So if I cough or my voice starts to go or I seem to drop in and out, it's because, I'm still kind of working my way through that. But we'll do what we can.
There's no dying during podcast recording, John.
Yes, if I could survive Dragon Con, I can survive the recording. But yes, Gary, why don't you get us started with your experience in Dragon Con?
Oh my gosh, I got to check off so many bucket list things. It was really amazing for me. I don't want to say it was my best Dragon Con ever, but geez, it was number two. I had a ball. Gosh, where to start? I was front row at William Shatner, which was, as most of our listeners and you know, of course, I am a huge Star Trek fan. So being able to front row was... A dream come true. It was really great to be that close. Not that I was planning to, attack him or anything like that, but it was nice to be that face to face with him. It was amazing. What else? Another fun thing that happened. For years, and this was my, I have to double check. It was either my 10th or 11th Dragon Con. I've always, toyed with being in the parade and say, one day I'll have to do that. And so this year I had made the dedication where I was going to go march with the Star Trek people. They're my people. And I figured, I'd be good. Then I got an invitation from a friend to go with their group. They're the Futurama group. And they're the person who typically plays their robot Santa, because every parade needs a Santa at the end. And the geek one gets a robot Santa, asked me to fill in. And I gladly said, forget it. I'm not going to be in a hot costume. They're like, it's not all that bad. What do you mean? You sit in the back of a truck and you just wave to people and threaten them. I said, okay. In that case, I'm all in. So I got to be in the parade this year at the tail end of it. And, wave and threaten in a menacing robot type of way everyone that walked down. My personal favorite experience was looking to the left, hearing little children talk to the right. Oh, look, Santa. And then when I turn around with the fearsome robot mask, you hear them scream. So
that sounds joyful.
Yes, for the 2 hours that you're, the hour and a half or 2 hours that you're going through the whole parade route, having it happen constantly was interesting and a lot of fun. Next year, the person that was doing Robot Santa will be back, so that option is not available. However, they've said that they would love to have a Zaf Brannigan join them. So I don't know if so I'm considering it. Anyway, also, I got to appear actual face-wise on Dragon Con TV, which is the local sort of mini cable channel that pops up for Dragon Con while it's occurring over the weekend. I've had text messages put on when they do some of their questions, but I never actually got with my face or my voice. So this time around, I did, and I want to thank Brian, Brian Richardson, one of the big people to me at Dragon Con, at least, for giving me the opportunity to be in a little skit with Dragon Con. And so, as I said, yet another bucket list to get filled up. There was a whole bunch of stuff that went on, and it was fun. As we mentioned, I did host several panels and moderate them. And I'll talk about it later, because I guess we will mention it later. I did get to host the Dark Matter panel the morning after it was announced it was canceled. So planning on what I was going to discuss or talk about was pretty much thrown right out the window, down the hall, and out the back door.
That had to be interesting.
It was a rough, it was a very rough panel given that. And I have to say I wasn't happy with my own moderating of the panel, and I felt it did get a little bit away from where I was wanted to go, or even where we might have needed to go with it. But I don't have to worry about that panel next year, since it won't be there. I'm sorry to hear that. And I made personal notes about trying to handle panels a little bit better, because I felt it didn't quite go where it should have gone. But we'll talk about actual content later. So panels, the costuming again continues to be amazing at the convention. So I brought, I think, 6 costumes. I ended up wearing 4, so I can't complain too much. But next year I will try and ramp it up with 1 or 2 new ones. But overall it was a lot of fun. Of course we got to meet with our fellow VOG hosts as well one evening for a little while, which is always fun, and got into a lot of not only show network discussions, but I actually got to touch base personally, which is always enjoyable. As I say, Dragon Con, with all the stars that show up, the panels that happen, the amazing costumes, the parade, it's the people that I really go for. You know, people I only get to see once a year, and it's like old home week, so it's always a ball to go. And you know, if the costumes were gone, if the panels were gone, I'd be happy to just sit down and share pizza with everybody and have a good time. So I don't want to ramble too long. I know we got a lot of content, but like I said, it was a lot of fun for me. I am already booked for next year, so I'm not concerned that I'm not going. So I will toss over some of your Dragon Con experiences to you.
Oh yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with much of what you said about the sentiment of going and meeting with all the VOG folks and just some of the people that we only see when we're there. That is really one of the biggest important things about it for me. It's less a con than it is really an annual reunion with a lot of other fun things to do while everybody is kind of in the same city together. I think that this year was probably the least amount of cosplay that I did. Ironically, I think you actually had more costume changes than I did. And that was largely because this year I actually had my son with me, which was a little bit unexpected. I was not expecting that to happen. It actually all came together about a week before we left. So it did necessitate a few changes in terms of my activities. I was going to march with the Assassin's Creed group in the parade, but I decided not to because it was a little bit logistically difficult. But this year I feel like in other ways I kind of settled in with Dragon Con more than I have in the past, because it was the third year that I stayed at the Sheraton, and I'm getting to the point now where I know my way around all too well.
Oh, you think so? No.
How to get around all the little traffic jams of people far better than I have before. I'm sure that there are plenty of other ways. You've showed me a few more as well. You always seem to know all these little secret passages and stuff. But certainly I'm learning how to get around the crowds better, which is good, because I had some panels where I had like 10 minutes to get there. And I could get from the Sheraton to the Hyatt or the Westin in 5-10 minutes flat. So it's definitely getting easier, because before I'd be stupid enough to try to go through the human habit trails, and that is never a good idea when you're trying to get from that far from where you're staying. But yes. I was on 5 panels. They all went pretty well. There were a couple that I wasn't sure they would be all that populated, and they wound up being pretty well attended, so that was good. One of them was literally right after the parade, and we actually had a pretty good number of people for it. That was the 12 Monkeys panel, where we really got into some interesting discussions for a Saturday morning. The one that was a little bit unusually sparse was the Colony panel. On Sunday morning, because it was literally the first panel Sunday morning, and as many people know, that is, you know, the morning after the big party night for all intent purposes. And I think some people that were in the audience didn't even know what show we were talking about. They just wanted a relatively quiet room. So even that said, the people that were there, it was nice to, I think I mentioned this last year when I went to New York Comic Con, where they start having these meetups and maybe you only have a couple dozen people in the room, in one of the smaller rooms down in the bottom of the Javits Center. But amongst 100,000 people, you can have this little meetup of people who all are into the same thing. And you can have these really great, in-depth, geeky, intimate discussions about that topic. And suddenly it's like, you're surrounded by all these thousands of people, but these are your folks right here in that room for an hour. And that was the feel of the Colony panel. I really liked that. It became less of a panel than it did just an overall geek fest. And I love that feeling. We had a great time at the Arrow panel, especially considering the fact that we actually had a season that we all liked this year. Last year was a little awkward. I think that the one that really surprised me a little bit was Saturday afternoon. We had a panel on The Expanse. And I really wasn't sure how many people were going to show up to that, to be honest, because it is a little bit of a niche show. But man, it was packed.
Well, I think you're playing to the playing to the crowd at that convention, but
Be. But it was packed. And there were a lot of very interactive folks in the audience, maybe a little too interactive. I think that we probably ran into some of the same derailing things that happened for you at the at Dark Matter, even though the Expanse, of course, is renewed for another season. But it did get a little rambunctious and a little out of control. And sometimes, you know, there is a certain art to moderation, and I wasn't the moderator there. I definitely feel like that was a really difficult crowd to try to moderate a panel for. And I think everybody on the panel did the best that they could to try and keep things on topic. But man, there were some times when there were audience members just debating with each other, and it was really difficult to get control of that crowd. But that said, it was still a really good panel and a really fun one. I almost didn't want it to end. And that's usually the mark of a good panel. I don't know about you, Gary, but when you get to the end of that hour and you almost feel like, man, I could do this for another hour again.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I moderated a Flash panel, and I had a ball. It was great. It flowed. Everybody was, you know, positively talking about it and where we were hoping it was going to go for the, you know, for the next season. And yeah, I know I walked out of that one wanting to do another hour. But yeah, I know what you mean. When it's running well, you hate to have it end.
Yeah, I was actually at that panel, so I agree. That one was a real fun one. Yeah, beyond that, it was just really good to see everybody. I think that there were some fun little moments. I can't say that the Twin Peaks panel that I went to was the best panel that I've attended, but it was really well populated with cosplayers, including me. And there was a nice little unexpected cosplay group picture afterward, so it was nice to see that there were some fellow Twin Peaks fans there, and that we were, you know, got to gather at least a little bit. Sadly, there was not a viewing party or experience for the finale for that show, but we'll talk about that show a little bit later. Like I said, we have commentary later. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I am booked for next year already. My room is ready, and I might have both kids there next year. That would be fun.
Oh,
it'll be my turn. Usually, it's you.
What? Oh, yeah.
But I think that it's getting to be the nice best way that possible to end the summer. Let's put it that way. Because especially up here in this part of the country, the kids usually don't start school, even college, until after Labor Day. So it is kind of the end of the summer for those of us up here. I know it's a little different in some other parts of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's one last story I need to tell about Dragon Con. And that's the flight home.
Wow. Oh, gosh. I got it. You could have went anywhere with that. Okay, good.
I really could have. I said that intentionally.
Thank you.
no Sharpies were involved. But, man, we're flying home. It's late on Monday. We're not really happy about it being over. And we wound up with these two families in front of us with really young children. Whew. Ugh. I try to be an understanding person, but when you get off the one family that was next to me, they had a toddler, and they just let this toddler beat the crap out of me, basically, for the 2 hours of the flight. But on the other side of the aisle was the rest of the family, and they left, like, literally a just layer of crumbs and food and wrappers on the floor for... I'm sorry, that's just rude. And they made the comment as they were getting up, oh, we left a present for the flight attendants. I'm like, what? Clean up after yourself. Come on, you're not animals. And the people in front of us, however, were even more generous because they decided to listen to a movie on their phone, but because only one of them had headphones, they decided to listen to the movie on the speakers on the phone. Turned up all the way. Don't they pretty much tell you you're not allowed to do that?
Yes.
Yeah, and I was waiting for the crew to actually tell them to stop, and they never did. So that was irritating. But we're sitting there with our heads over our headphones trying to listen to the movie that I had on my laptop, and we could still hear them over that. That's how loud it was. It was a difficult flight.
Oh, sounds like it.
Yeah, not my favorite one. But and certainly it kind of was like, wow, now I'm even more depressed over the end of Dragon Con because I had that flight. But there we are. It happens, right? Hopefully not when I fly over to Europe in a week or so. 8 hours, that would not be acceptable.
Bring earplugs.
Yeah, or better headphones. Now, we normally would have been recording last weekend, because we usually record the week after Dragon Con. But I was actually away 2 weeks in a row at conventions. I was at a little first-year convention at the Kalahari in the Poconos in Pennsylvania at a con called Colossal Con East. Now, some people are familiar with Colossal Con, which is the one that takes place at the Kalahari Water Park in Ohio. This is, of course, an offshoot of that. Their first attempt at doing it here on the East Coast. And I think that I was kind of surprised by the number of people that showed up because it wasn't well advertised, in my opinion. It was mostly advertised on Facebook, which apparently that was good enough because there were thousands of people and the place was pretty much run by the con. There were other people who were staying because they couldn't fill the whole con or the whole resort. But the vast majority of people that were in the water park on Saturday and Sunday were in cosplay, taking pictures in the water, and then in the water park, and the halls were just decked with people in costume. And it was actually really a nice vibe. I was expecting it to be a little bit more... what's the word that I'm looking for?
Busy? Organized? What?
I guess I could say that because of the venue and so forth, I initially got the feeling that there was a little bit of... that it skewed very young, and that there was a little bit of a an attitude about older people there. In the older crowd, but that kind of went away pretty fast. I think that it was just kind of like a false impression that I got because the crowd itself seemed really inclusive. I mentioned on my Facebook that some people may remember that there was one cosplayer who was cosplaying Asuka, and she was a little bit older. She was probably in her 20s, and she saw me on Saturday night as Shinji, and she went crazy. She was just like, oh my god, oh, this is so great, you have to take a picture with me. And she was so excited, and it was like, you know how you get that feeling when you're at Dragon Con? It's a similar thing, right? Where you can find people that are just so excited that they find someone in a costume that they recognize and that they were actually looking for. And that kind of made my day that day. It was, you know, later in the day I was a little tired, especially after Dragon Con and going right from that into another one, and it was really kind of nice to get that kind of response. Especially as, you know, I wasn't one of these young studs running around with only, like, a bathing suit on, so it was kind of nice. And dealer's room was a little small. They did something that I had not seen too often before. They had, like, a flea market on Sunday morning. And what I'm guessing is that this was for people who wanted to get rid of some of their older merch and didn't have enough money to buy a true
table.
So they basically could stake out space in the flea market, and you could haggle away with these people for some of their merch. And, you know, we wound up not actually getting anything, but we did see some really nice stuff in there, and it seemed like it was really popular. And I'm betting that they've done this at Colossal Con before at the other one, and this, they did the same thing here at East, but that was really successful, and I think that that's a really great idea. That, you know, there's a lot of us that have things that we probably could and probably should be kind of putting onto the market. But you throw stuff on eBay, it's not always the easiest thing to get somebody to respond. So having that little thing where, okay, you could go to the dealer's room and get the premium merch, or you could go over here and maybe pay a little bit less for something that's a little worn or used, that's a pretty cool idea. I think that more cons could learn from that. Then again, for all I know, a lot of cons could do that, I just don't see it. Maybe it's something that's done off, you know, not on the East Coast where I typically go.
Yeah.
My one kind of negative comment is that the panels were largely lacking. Now, granted, I went from Dragon Con, where you typically can find some pretty good cons, even or panels, even the fan panels on some of the more less trodden tracks, perhaps. There's usually a certain level of entertainment you can get from them.
Yes.
But man, we went to some panels and they were painful. They just didn't know what they were doing, it felt like. Like, I don't know if it was the first time they've ever done a panel. Sometimes they would sit there and say, when we've done this panel before, and I was at that and thought to myself, you've done this to people before? And they still let you come back? It's just, you know those panels where you walk in and within 5 minutes they really have no idea where to go?
Yes.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing. And it was just really, oh, painful. And there was one panel that we went to where everyone at the table actually didn't like the show that they were talking about. and it became really like awkward because the audience was a little hostile towards the panelists because they were digging on the show that they were there to actually talk about. It was a little awkward. I think that of like about four or five different panels that we tried, I think one of them was successful, and it was like the in-character, what's the show? It's like it was like a game show, dating game. That was funny. That worked. But everything else was really rough. And I was a little disappointed by that. I would have thought that, okay, granted, if it was a true first-year con, I could have understood that. But one that was kind of an offshoot with people that had done the panels before, they need to work on that. That's about the only thing I can really say negative about it, because otherwise it was actually a really nice weekend. It was very calm. It was fun to be at the water park. And it kind of took away, at least a little bit, the post-con depression from Dragon Con, because it was like, oh, I get at least a little bit of it. A little bit of an echo. And this one was, of course, more anime-oriented, so for better or worse, the anime presence at Dragon Con is very much niche. So it was kind of able to scratch that itch as well, but yeah, the panels were the kind of the down part. The nice thing is that it's only about an hour away drive, so...
Oh, that's nice.
Get home. The other downside is that I got con crud. I think I was so exhausted from Dragon Con that my immune system was non-existent by the time that I got to Sunday at Colossal Con.
Oh, I'll bet.
Yeah, so that's been the last like couple weekends, obviously very full. The nice thing about it is that there weren't a whole lot of shows on, so it was easy to get caught back up. There's been other years where we go to Dragon Con and we literally have like 20 shows to try to catch up on, which is amazing. But this year it just didn't turn out that way, which was helpful. Let's see. I also was able to catch up on some other news and things and kind of look at the fall, read some books, watch some other TV shows, things like that. So let's see. Why don't we just go ahead and stick with the news, and then we'll get into some of the other things that we did next time. But just to kind of get into a little bit of these news items, things that happened the last couple weeks. Well, why don't we go ahead and start with the one that you mentioned, Gary? Dark Matter was canceled.
Yes.
Cliffhanger.
Oh, yeah, you're telling me. And we the room I was in at the time, the next morning after that had happened, I wouldn't say they were angry, just sort of disappointed. They were, you know, obviously Dark Matter has not been getting a tremendous amount of ratings, especially since the schedules were changed around a little bit this season. And they were on the bubble, admittedly, and the writers decided rather than possibly wrap things up or at least give us a clue, no, they're going to throw us right over the edge and pray for renewal, which will not happen. So what can I say about the show? I have enjoyed the show a lot. You've expressed more than valid criticisms about it, and I can't deny that a lot of them are there. The lack of ability to identify with main characters, mixing up numbers as for the names because they never bothered to switch back even after they learned them, was a carryover, I suppose, from the miniseries where it had concluded without ever really delving into their original personalities that much. But haphazard performance of the android character. But at the same time, I thought they opened up several different things. We still had this sort of corporate war that they hinted about. We had this whole android rebellion / rights issue that was coming up that I thought would have been really fun to explore, a very Star Trek way of going about discussing some of the issues we're dealing with currently as a society. And as well as the betrayal of within some of the different houses and stuff that was going on. So I thought they'd opened up a lot of potential going forward, and we'll never get to see any of it. Maybe we'll get lucky and they actually will do a comic book to close out the comic book inspired story. So we can hope, but yeah, it was sad. I continue to enjoy the show, and the leap forward that they had done, while not much more successful than the leap backward, was very. I loved some of the teases that they came up with, and I'm sorry not to see them followed through. So I may not be standing online marching as I would for other shows, but I still will shed a tear because I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was really interesting to me to hear people talk about the fact that they, that they enjoyed Dark Matter. This was at Dragon Con I'm talking about. That there were so many people who were upset because, and universally they would say, oh, because I enjoyed Dark Matter more than I did Killjoys. When, I don't know that necessarily the ratings don't agree with that, but clearly the fate of the shows is in very stark disagreement with that analysis. But it was just very odd to me how many people said that. And especially when, I mean, it just seemed like you then ask, you know, what is it exactly that you felt was better about one show versus the other? And to be honest with you, they kind of had a hard time saying. I hate to say that. It's not really a criticism. It's just more along the lines of, like, well, yeah, it's like, man, that show got canceled, and I liked it so much better than the show that got renewed. Why? I don't know. it's a little bit of an odd answer. I would hope for a little bit more to work with. But yeah, it just seems like there are some of these creators that if they're not given the grace of a renewal that's, you know, got a cancellation kind of attached to it, as seems to happen more often than not these days. Like, you get one more season. Thank you. Good. Yeah, it seems like that's almost like that's the exception rather than the rule these days for them to get that kind of warning. And so the fact that they didn't, I completely commiserate with the fans of Dark Matter that was a little bit of an unfortunate turnabout. But at the same time, the producers, without that kind of assurance, really made the decision to leave it on a cliffhanger. That wasn't Sci-Fi. I think that, you know, it's just like with Netflix and Sense8. They didn't decide to have that season end on a cliffhanger. The writers did. The producers did. That's really their responsibility for leaving the fans hanging. We've seen time and time again that studios, networks, really don't care that you've left things on a cliffhanger. That's not a compelling reason for them to say, okay, you know what, we weren't going to renew you, but because you left it on a cliffhanger and the fans are going to be pissed, let's give you a renewal. No, that doesn't work.
No.
So, yeah. I definitely feel for the fans. I would, even a show that I wound up not liking, I would much rather it went out with a solid pre-planned ending. It doesn't work out that way all the time, and it's really unfortunate, especially these days where it seems like there are so many other shows that are getting the grace of knowing their future. And that's where Killjoys comes in again, because they literally, within like 24 hours of each other, these announcements came out that said Killjoys then, at the same time that Dark Matter is getting canceled, with no additional episodes to close out the story, Killjoys is getting 2 seasons to finish things up. So they were told, okay, you're basically ending season 3. You're going to be done at the end of season 5. That's pretty generous. And it also tells me which show the network thought was the more successful in return on investment.
But, well, it was. I mean, it has been. It's been definitely, it definitely has a large vocal audience. And I can definitely see it, you know, that they would pick. If I had to pick from either of the two, I probably would have picked that one as well. It's, it's a lot more fun, and I won't say light, but it's definitely, it's much more unique, I think, than Dark Matter is.
Yeah, and quite frankly, with The Expanse on the same network, if they're gonna, you know, they're seeing one show getting huge critical buzz, but maybe not the numbers, but certainly perhaps on streaming and other venues, they're getting the kind of traffic that they want and the critical buzz for a hard sci-fi show. And then Dark Matter is kind of the also-ran at this point, unfortunately. So I kind of see where they're thinking, oh, here was this show that was already very low budget. We didn't have a lot of room to slash things in order to make it more affordable. The ratings aren't sustaining it. Yeah, unfortunately, Dark Matter was just not delivering. And to be fair also to Sci-Fi, they are renewing shows that are not getting great ratings, but are getting the right kind of attention. But they're also letting other shows go pretty quickly, too. So.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I mean, there's this... we were talking about shows that are not being given a chance to wrap up. We're talking about shows that are being given advance warning of when they're going to wrap up. And then we're still seeing this phenomenon of shows getting renewed for additional seasons before their current season even hits the air.
Regardless of what the show is, and even if I'm that sort of enamored by it, I have to question why is it some sort of contractual issue or something like that, that they feel the need to lock everything down early? It just doesn't make sense. What if the show bombs hideously and they've already agreed to film two seasons?
See, I think that you've got your finger right on the pulse of this one. I think that it has more to do with pinning down and keeping the cast on contract than anything else.
But don't they usually have these clauses anyway? Typically, they usually have at least a few years of renewal built into them. So I
don't know either exactly why it works out that way, but I feel like it is a matter of trying to keep your talent pinned in and on contract. And it might even be a matter of when they have the money to invest, that they might have a short list in some of these studios and some of these networks where they say, basically, if we've got X amount of money left over after we commit to the fall or whatever it is, and we want to keep this show because it's getting good enough ratings or we anticipate something good, let's go ahead and earmark that money that keeps them on contract. And we always have in there a clause that basically says that at any time we can rescind this decision. So, because we know we've seen shows that have been renewed for multiple seasons that wound up getting cut short. Farscape. That said, though, Vikings, which is a pretty strong winner for the History Channel, I believe it's on History, it's going to start its fifth season this fall, and it's already renewed for season six. The one that I think is more of a gamble, and certainly raised some eyebrows, is Star Trek Discovery being renewed for a second season.
Wait, how can you say renewed when it hasn't aired yet?
Yeah.
So basically, they gave them a two-season.
But yes, that is exactly what they did.
Yeah, so they gave them a two-season contract, is what they gave. Now, that being said, and some of the animosity to the side for a moment, you know, I do want a new Star Trek series to be successful, and I can still remember the first few episodes of Next Generation being absolutely horrendous.
Yeah,
my particular favorite was Yar fighting the woman on the planet as they were hopping around a jungle gym.
That was high action drama. Here's the wrinkle with Discovery. Yeah. We still don't know if they're sticking to this whole idea that each season is going to be a standalone story. So this renewal...
I thought that went out the door with Singer.
I'm not sure if it went out the door with Fuller or not. Because, I mean, maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But that would be an interesting wrinkle here, is that they're renewing it for a second season with the knowledge that it's going to be a completely different story. We'll see. We'll find out. But for them to do that, with this show in particular, that has been so just, what's the word I want to use? Beleaguered? I don't know. And of course, then just recently we got the news that they're not allowing people to publish reviews prior to it hitting the air. They're not giving people review copies in order to give advance discussion on the show until it hits the air.
Which they typically do with pretty much every show.
Yeah.
At least the ones they want to work.
Yeah, they give screeners all the time for stuff. Usually that kind of thinking goes into movies and stuff where they don't give you a screener copy, and that's usually a sign that there's something wrong. Now, I don't know if we can say the same thing about Discovery, because there's quite a lot that looks like it could be good. But at the same time, it's like, wow, this is just really strange. On the one hand, you're giving them a second season, sight unseen, really. And that's a huge vote of confidence. And then within days later, you're not allowing people to get screener copies, which is like the least amount of support or show of confidence that you could have. I really think they're all over the map with this. That said, next time we record, in a couple weeks, the show will be out. We'll know for ourselves.
Yep.
What else do you take away from that? Anything or what?
You know, it might just be the way for them to try and build excitement or something like that. Maybe they don't want the reviews to taint or spoil people. Maybe they do remember the early days of Next Generation and all the trials and tribulations that went on and led up to that. And they're trying to sidestep some of them and just, you know, let us be judged by our work, not by what critics say about us. So, I mean, it's already divisive enough, but then so was Next Generation back in the day. I mean, I remember that, you know, pretty much every Star Trek series that comes out has some sort of drama about it. When Next Generation came out, you had a whole bunch of stuff. Even when, Deep Space Nine came out, what do you mean it's not going to be on a ship? Voyager came out. What do you mean? We're used to not being. We're used to the whole interlink of the Federation. We don't want to be out in the wilderness anymore. Like, and I'm like, yeah. You know, it's just, you know, it just doesn't seem like you can win. There's, you know, there's always going to be some group of fandom that's going to want something older or newer or whatever. So while it is atypical, and I realize that for a lot of people it's either scares and or frustrates them, I'm still willing to give them a pass. This is experimental in a lot of different ways for even for Star Trek. You know, we're going to a almost a subscription model for viewing. We're not having the captain be the focus or part of the main focus in on the ship this time around. As best I can tell, there's two ships involved in the series, which is another twist to things. So there's a lot that where they're shaking up the look of the aliens again, where most of the series hadn't done that at this point. So I mean, they're doing a lot of different things. And it's I want to give it a chance. They're bringing in a lot of old Star Trek directors to direct episodes. It reads like a who's who of Star Trek when you've seen some of the directors. Everybody from you know Jonathan Frakes. There's a lot of old Star Trek names, which is interesting considering when they made the break with the movies, they wanted no old Star Trek people. But now that the series is coming up, they're flushing them out of the woodwork, which is good in my opinion. So like I said, I think they're being very cautious, and they know the backlash that Star Trek fans can give to a series, and they want to avoid that, I think, and perhaps rightly so. If you remember, as I said, I remember the vitriol that every new series has experienced, and this one doesn't seem like it's much different in that respect. So if they want to try something different this time around, well, the last three or four times we did this, it didn't turn out so well. So, you know, maybe we need to, you know, do something different this time. So I'll give them the benefit of a doubt.
If we could handle half of Voyager, we can handle some of this.
As a side note, did you know that Voyager is the most watched Star Trek series on Netflix?
You know why? Most people didn't watch it when it was first run.
Well played, sir. Well played, sir. Well played.
It was too easy. All right, we're going to actually wrap this episode
up. Okay, fair enough, yes.
We have a few other things to talk about, but we will go ahead and do that next time because we were already pretty much full up on this one. Yeah, when we come back next time, there's a little bit of other news that we want to get into, some of the things that we've been up to the last few weeks that weren't con-related, and then just some thoughts on the fall and some of the things that are coming up because I'm a little bit surprised at how sparse the schedule is in the fall, actually. I think we're going to wind up getting hammered in the spring and winter more than the fall this year. But we'll expound on that a little bit more next time. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.